Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between wordcraft and the writer's life. I'm Darilyn Evans, and I'm here with Molly Martin, my co-host. James Stiegel is away, and he may be away for a little while. The newborn is giving him a little bit of a dent in his writing time, so he's focused on writing and work right now. So it's been a few weeks since we've gotten together. So how are things going in your writing world, Molly?
Well, thanks for checking in with me, Darilyn. I was confessing to you before we started recording that I am actually starting to plot things now. And
what?
I know, and now it's on the record. So I have been using and researching a variety of different ways to structure stories, and most of them are based on, you know, Joseph Campbell's famous hero's journey. And a number of years ago, you had made these wonderful little cards that had written out the hero's journey, the different stages of the hero's journey, with some notes of what was happening in the external story and also in the hero's internal journey. And so I am currently in the process of trying to plot out a story using the actual structure of the hero's journey, because I've scorned it for so long. I'm like, well, you know, any idiot can do this. It can't be that hard. And so I realized that if my contention is any idiot can do this and it can't be that hard, then therefore I, as any idiot, should be able to do this.
Okay. You've been able to do it without the plotting, but I'm happy to hear you're coming across to the fold. Oh, wait, does that make us the herd of idiots? I'm not sure if I like that. No. Cool. Okay, well, we'll talk. I think that's what our topic today is going to be, talking about structure and using it to outline a story. But how is the rest of your writing life going? Like, you have some exciting news, don't you?
I have exciting news that I have finished book two of my series, which is called, tentatively called Ashfall.
Yay!
And I haven't killed all the characters, despite the fact that I wanted to.
Save that for book three.
I know. Everybody's going to die. It's like George R. R. Martin is just going to cry.
No!
At home.
You can't kill. Can't kill John Courage.
I know. There's it's fun because there are different people who are like, if I ever say, oh, I'm going to kill somebody off, then it's fun to see the results of who will step up on behalf of which characters. And they're like, oh, okay, I didn't expect that was your favorite character, but that's good to know.
Oh, I like them all. They're too precious.
Yeah, they are all too precious. Actually, that's kind of my problem. Some of my characters have become quite precious, and I'm like, well, I should probably, like, just for form's sake, at least kill one or two of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where you have to introduce some kind of secondary characters and make them lovable, and then just axe them so we keep all the main ones.
I was actually gonna kill some kids.
Oh, you monster!
And then I couldn't bring myself to do it. Spoiler alert. So,
In this book anyways,
yeah. And I was like, okay, well, there's a kitten that's going to die anyways, so someplace.
Oh, you're not allowed to kill the kitten.
I know.
So, cool.
Or at least an ill-tempered squirrel. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something has to die in the post-apocalyptic world.
Well, otherwise, how would we have zombies, right? So, cool. Any other exciting things going on?
So I guess my other exciting thing is, now that I'm done with book two, I'm going back and looking at book three, and sort of with a renewed interest in book three, because I'm like, okay, I know where book two is done, and now I can pick up with book three and kind of move on. And one of the things that I had started book three and got quite a ways into it before I realized that a lot of material in book three actually had to go back in book two. So now I'm re-picking up book three, which has been fun. And I'm working on the new short story and another short story. So a couple of short stories, which what I realized is basically I'm kind of a promiscuous author, and I like to cheat on my stories. And that kind of makes me a bad person because I'm not really happy working on the story that I should be working on. Like the story that I'm currently in a relationship with, that's the story that I don't want to be in a relationship with. So I'll go and write a different story. So if I trick myself by having multiple stories, then I might accidentally write the one that I'm supposed to be writing.
There you go.
Because it's feeding on the other story.
Aw. Well, gosh, that seems like a good way to be productive and prolific in the end. At least you're not cheating on the story with like binge watching something on Netflix. So.
Yes, or I have never done that at all. No, it's more multitasking of just putting on something in the background and then like trying to ignore Netflix as much as possible while I write, which is not very productive. But.
Mm-hmm. I have heard in terms of the creative process, like some authors will do work on multiple things at a time, or creatives, I should say, work on multiple things at a time because you can start one and when that gets stuck, kind of ask the question that what's the next thing or and then go mull on it and work on a different creative project for a while, and then that lets your subconscious try to solve the problem of the first one. So really you're just being an intuitively productive creative there, right?
Yes, that's totally what it is. It sounds a lot better when you say it.
Yeah. Are you working on, are these stories set in the same world or the same characters? Are they completely different and unrelated or stepping out of genre or?
Well, so one of them is a story that's based on Nina Creaky Hoffman's story cookbook that I just rolled up a bunch of stuff, and I'm writing an urban fantasy story, which is totally not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it could only be better if it was like an urban fantasy about princesses and romance, and that would be like
that would be everything that you loathe in one go.
And then the character's main concern is her pretty dresses.
Yes.
And
yeah.
But other than that, like, okay, well, if my main character is concerned about the same things that my toddler is concerned about, then maybe it's not like super hard hitting.
Oh.
Although my toddler is also very concerned with being Captain Marvel, so I think that's fine.
Hey, that is not bad. So we won't have any spoilers yet because I still haven't managed to get to the movie theater, but cool. It's so cool that she's into that.
I'm going to assume that you haven't been able to get to the theater because you have been doing so much awesome writing, because I've been watching, like, even though I haven't been filling out our sheet, occasionally I check in and see all the awesome work that you've been doing.
Yeah, I did want to check in on you because I haven't seen you in the sheet. Are you getting some words down?
I
was worried if you were stuck or it just weren't filling that out.
No, I haven't been filling it out, and I occasionally will go back and try to reconstruct it, and then if like more than a few days have passed since I filled it out, then I'm kind of at a loss to try to figure out like when were which words written. So then I'll like take a chunk and average it and go, okay, in the last 2 days I wrote 600 words, so I'm just gonna count 300 for each day and call it good.
That works.
Yeah, so I do some reconstruction, but I've been writing, I've been allowing myself to write in a lot more different places. Like I've kind of strategically scattered notebooks around through my house, and like sometimes I'm like, oh, I write in a notebook beside my bed. Now I'm writing in the notebook that's in the kitchen, and now I'm writing in the notebook that's in my bag. But it's harder to get those words counted because they're not easily, like, I can't just highlight them and go, oh, that's how many words I wrote.
That's okay. It was just a mere tool, but I'm excited to
it's very helpful. The thing is, like, I will actually open it and have it opened in the background, like, like it's watching me.
It's letting you know.
Yeah.
I'm here judging. No, not really. Yep. Cool. Yeah, I've had a few days where I'll write and I'll track it in. I have a couple different sheets I'm tracking in, but I have one that I excuse me. It does math. It maths for the English major, where it it tells me, like, I'll put how many minutes I've written and how many words I got in that session. And it'll tell me what my, if as though I were writing words per hour, like what my, my word speed is. So I definitely always put it in that one each night. And then, but occasionally I don't get to the online one to fill in, but yeah, I find it so motivational to watch those words accrete. And when it passed 50,000 words, like 2 weeks ago, it was so exciting. That was more words than I wrote last year, I think, or at least it felt like it. So there's some real power in tracking progress, because it's so incremental, and so you lose the feeling of how far you've come or how much you're actually writing. So enjoying that piece. Sorry, I went off on a little tangent there.
No, that's good. This is what check-in is for. We're checking in.
Yeah. So, well, I guess I should probably check in. I can't say, so my project for the first 2 months of the year was to simply write every day, and I have been writing short stories, and mostly out of Nina Creaky Hoffman's story cookbook. I've rolled up a bunch of stories and written, and occasionally other things. And there have been a few short stories that have come out of that, but most recently, so my hope had been to turn to like actually writing a novel during April's Camp NaNoWriMo, but I didn't get that far because it's been super crazy at work, and I just couldn't. We had like several big events in a row. We were at AWP last week, which I can talk about in a minute. But so I found some memes that are, one was find your YA book title, and one is create a story with a plot twist that's just kind of silly, and then the story of your life. And they're those little things where, like, you know, the month you were born and the letter of your last name and the day of birth. And so you get crazy things like girls, the Statue of Liberty, and other inexplicable phenomenon. So I usually roll all through, or like just pick something random from each of the pages. And then I just have one character, her name, and a couple of side characters that go with her. And I just write a story about her based on whatever that is. So Ellis Brishnahan has done all kinds of crazy things in the last couple months. But it's been kind of a good exercise to, I'm practicing different things like different kinds of conflict and whatnot in scenes. So that's been pretty fun. And I'm hoping, or I just have one more big event, and then I can step back and have, I'm going to go to I have a cabin in the woods that I have rented, and I'm going to go there for 2 days and plot out some, or a couple of a bigger project, so that I can start actually actively writing a book. So I'm very excited. So after this weekend, another Fiction Fluency weekend with Eric Witchie coming up this weekend. So it's pretty exciting. So, but in other, let's see what else I've been up to. So we were at AWP this last week with Word Crafters, and AWP is the Associated Writers and Writing Programs Conference. And this is it's the biggest writing conference in North America, and it's it comes out of all of the creative writing programs. This is where they meet each year for their kind of academic conference that gives them legitimacy in their departments, I guess. Lots of luminaries of literary fiction and whatnot. So it's a really interesting conference to go to. They've got on the conference side, they've got panels and talks, and then there's a lot of, if you're a writing teacher, there's some things on pedagogy, and a lot of readings by amazing writers from all over. So it's a pretty cool event to go to, although it's really interesting because it is all the writing programs and all of these literary folks, it of course is very literary, and there is a lot of, you can feel some, I don't know what quite the word is, tension, about, or maybe a little bit of, prejudice about folks who write genre fiction or folks mm-hmm. who write commercial fiction. So it's really interesting because you go to other kinds of writers' conferences and it'll be the exact opposite where it's like, oh, those literary folks. So it's kind of funny. It's a really funny dynamic at AWP. But we took a table up there for Word Crafters and we got to talk to lots of writers in the schools programs and other writers in our area. So that part was really fun.
Nice. But
yeah. And just to like, I'm trying to think, who was I got to walk by Cheryl Strayed and then Lydia Yuknovich walked by our table and we might have fangirled out a little bit. And then John Defresny, I totally made a fool out of myself fangirling talking to him. It was really funny. So yeah, it was pretty amazing because you get some really cool big authors there. So we had a good time. So there was that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then I'm really excited about Eric Witchie's going to talk about conflict this week. So it should be good. And that's what I've been working on in my stories lately. So it'll be good timing. So, all right.
Then you can head off to the woods all inspired by Eric Witchie's.
Yes.
Class.
Yes.
Right. Amazing conflicts.
Yeah. Although it's good that we were talking about outlining today and story structure because I can take both of those things and make a good plan. So.
All right.
All right. We're going to talk about story structure today since we are bringing Molly over into the land of plotting. So.
I'm visiting.
You're visiting.
I'm just there on a visa. I'm not moving
it. Yes. So what I think is really interesting, so we talk about plotting and outlining, I think and Molly had taken a workshop that I did a while back on plotting, and we call it plotting, but I like to think of it really as kind of more the word I've heard lately is blueprinting. It's when you're working with story structure as opposed to plotting and saying, well, first they're going to cross the street and then they're going to walk into the building and then, you know, and then there's going to be a car chase and then there's going to be a volcano blow up, like plot things. I like to think of it as really having a discovering who your character is and then and thinking about the emotional side of the story and building from there and what, and then you can create what kind of actions are going to drive that character to grow and change. So when I've been looking at it, that's kind of how I was thinking of it. The most famous story structure, of course, I don't know, maybe it's not the most famous, but the one I know best is Joseph Campbell. I think that's what kind of set off the world of story structure stuff. And he was looking at his monomyth, although he's looking at that from the angle of folklore, and he's a mythologist, and thinking about it, and then looking at that mythology and stories through the lens of psychology and seeing that there is an underlying structure to story of how the plot goes, but then really as he's looking through the lens of psychology, he's seen that this the outside events that happen in a story are mimicking the, you know, our psychological process of growing and learning. And so really the outside of the story, the plot, is reflecting the characters grappling with whatever issue that they're learning and dealing with, you know, whatever their mistaken belief or their irreconcilable self is, and driving them to grow and change. So kind of how I like to think about it. And so one thing I had done is looking at the at Joseph Campbell's story structure, it was a little hard to know, okay, like here are the 12 steps of the hero's journey, but how exactly do you use that as a writer? And like what kind of scenes usually happen in each of those points along the way? And so I just made up some cards that physically, you know, here plot wise, here's what's happening when you're crossing the threshold, here are the kind of scenes that you get. But then Also, what is the emotional side of that? So, you know, where is your character in their emotional arc and what might be driving them? And so that's how I like to think about structures. It's really important as you're plotting, not just to say, okay, there's going to be a car chase and then they're going to, you know, confront the kidnappers and then they're going to, I don't know, escape whatever, that it's really about what's happening emotionally and are they going to be able to make, you know, and what kind of decisions are they going to make and what kind of action or plot is going to help provoke them. So blah, blah, blah. Okay.
I think that was a good summation.
Okay. Off the top of my head, I haven't looked at it in a couple days.
I don't know. I think it gives everybody a good idea and enough information to at least get started. I wish that you had those cards. I think that you would you'd be able to make a fortune if you would print out those cards and sell them on WordCrafters website or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll start working on
every WordCrafters. Just set up a little Etsy space or something like that.
Just a little thing.
Little thing, because they are incredible. And I'm just going to say, because I'm going to go ahead and hold the Daryl Lynn parade. Every single writer that I've ever shown those cards to has like wanted to keep them. And it's been really hard for me to maintain a set of them because I'll show other writers. I'm like, I have these amazing cards. And when I show other writers, then, writers aren't very good at actually conducting violent confrontation, but I think they would really like to.
Fortunately, you are a trained soldier, so you can keep hold of them.
Yes, I've managed to keep the cards.
Thank you. I do want to say one more thing about that. So Molly and I have you come into this not being a natural plotter. You like to write into the dark, as some people say. And I will confess that I'm a little bit more naturally a pantser rather than a plotter, but I used to spend a lot of time, like I could get those first, you know, 30 or 50 or 100 pages done and then I wouldn't know what to do. And so when I discovered story structure, not plotting per se, but I really understood how to look at story structure and learned how to use it, and really the cards come out of me trying to figure out, you know, on paper, well, what comes next and what does this really look like? That understanding story structure, even if you don't fully plot out a story or outline it, is how I like to think about it, then at least you know what the next step or two, so you can still have that right into the dark or you know, noodle around and figure it out as you go, but you have a little bit of a map, so at least you know emotionally and you know, plot wise where you are in your story and you can move forward that way. So we're going to talk about Molly actually moving into outlining a full story or she writes it, but you can do this both ways. I just want to be an advocate though for really, you know, learning story structure and spending some time with it, because I think it can be helpful even as a pantser to learn it. Okay. I'll get off my soapbox now.
Oh no, that's okay. I'll climb up onto the vacant soapbox then. And with a final word or a final thought on this is, I think, so Stephen King sort of was famous for talking about the fact that he doesn't do a lot of outlining. And I can't remember who was the person who made the observation that that he has spent so much time internalizing the structure of stories that he doesn't have to outline because he intuitively knows this is the structure of stories. And so if you're not Stephen King and you haven't spent, you know, the entirety of your childhood writing short stories and the entirety of your college time writing short stories and then taught English as a profession for several years, you probably haven't internalized story structure to the level that you can just completely dispense with it in a conscious way, the way that Stephen King does. So if you're not Stephen King, you probably still need to do this. And so for me, what I'm beginning to realize is that there are different times in the cycle of story creation where you need to do different things, where sometimes you do need to be a plotter, but other times you just need to throw caution to the wind and just write whatever comes out. And if you're having one of those days where you can just write whatever comes out, you know, don't look at your plan at all, just write. But for me, those days are way fewer than I would like them to be.
Aww.
So on the days when, you know, inspiration doesn't strike, the work still needs to get done. And I think that's really when I need the plot, because the plot, at least then there's something on the page. Like, you don't just sit there and look at the blank page with the blinking cursor very judgmentally blinking at you. You have something on the page that says, today a character is going to do X, and they're going to encounter Y, and they're going to feel Z. So even if it's bad, it's something. So that's where I'm at as far as the structure. So what I've been doing with the hero's journey and plotting out the short story is going through and just filling in sort of, you know, here's the external, what's going on externally, the different scenes, and then here's the internal stuff. And the reason that I'm very, very thankful for the cards and for the attention that's been paid to the emotional thing is I think a lot of structure or a lot of classes will talk to people about here's how to plot and here's what the hero's journey is. And they'll sort of pay lip service to the idea that this needs to be an external and an internal conflict at the same time. But a lot of people don't really delve into what does it mean to have an internal conflict and how does that internal conflict both reinforce your external conflict and how does it work against your external conflict? Because there are sometimes that you want the character's internal conflict to line up with their external conflict. Like they're having a problem letting go of something and they're physically having a problem getting rid of something. So those two things are in alignment. And there are other times in the story where you want their internal conflict to be opposing that their external conflict. So their internal conflict may be like, I need to be able to trust this person, but their external conflict may be, I've trusted the wrong person and been betrayed. So now I'm suffering the consequences of trusting this other character, but I should be trusting this, you know, this first character.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been finding from plotting all of these things out ahead of time is it helps me to slow down and to consider who do these characters need to be, like not to sort of force the characters to be something that they're not, but as I'm writing it, so for example, I got to the scene where the character is, the mentor. So the character is in a scene where their mentor is gonna come to them and encourage them to accept the quest. And then I realized like, okay, but now I have to establish previous to this who the mentor is and what the mentor's relationship to the main character is. And so it doesn't necessarily force me to change who the mentor character is because I already know who they are. I just need to give that information to the reader before it comes up in the story. So what it's helping me do is be less exposition-y. The mentor comes onto scene and I don't have to say, and as you know, we have been friends for lo these past 20 years. And, you know, I was at your sister's wedding and so on and so on and so on.
As you know, Bob.
As you know, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I find that I don't like mansplaining in real life and I don't like characters mansplaining to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as you know. Here's the previous state of our relationship. And I like, I was actually there for that relationship. So I do already know.
I do. Yes. Well, when you fall into that, it's like, well, that's only for the reader. That's not really for the characters. So
yes.
Cool. So now you're just in the middle of first really big attempt at plotting, right? Or
I've made a number of attempts at plotting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm doing now is I'm reverse plotting, mm-hmm. which is, I finished book two, I'm reverse plotting book two in that I go back and I write a synopsis of everything that I think happened in book two. And then I'm, in a few weeks when I can stand to look at it again, then I will go through and look at my synopsis and try to figure out, okay, these are the things that I think happened, and here's the things that I actually wrote happened, and then how closely do those things align?
Mm-hmm.
So if I wrote, this is an epic, emotional scene, and the character was like, hey, what's up? then I probably going to need some revision.
Yes. that may not be reflecting the emotion, the depth of emotion in that character in that moment, right?
Yeah. My problem is I think that I've just been spoiled by TV, and TV has things like, you know, different takes, and they can use camera tricks and music and color and pacing and wardrobe and all of these other cues to cue the viewer and to cue us as we're consuming TV and movies that, you know, emotion is going on. We've got some violins or some cellos or some, mm-hmm. you know, heroic sounding brass instruments. And so that will tell us, you know, even if the actors and actresses aren't, it tells us like big emotions are happening. Mm-hmm. But we as writers do not have all those things.
Right. Yes, but we can actually examine their interior and say what they're thinking and feeling, or show by their observation of things what they're thinking mm-hmm. and feeling. So that's, I'm not going to be able to pull it off the top of my head right now, but Jeff Geiger at our last conference, his great part was how description and exposition is the music soundtrack of story for novels for writers. So and really thinking like to show the interiority of what's mm-hmm. happening, and to show that emotion and drama of what's happening. So it's just figuring out how the lines translate from different arts, so different forms.
Exactly. What I really want to know is how to make people cry. So
yes.
If I could just make people cry a lot, then I think I'll be doing well.
Well, and the challenging part of that is really, I mean, because what we read for, what story is really about, is that interiority and how it's not what happens, but how the characters reacting to what happens and how it's affecting them emotionally. Yes, we're upset when people kick puppies and do mean things to people, but it's really like how those people, how the characters and the puppies are reacting to this, that is the real heartstring puller. And so finding the ways, but we can't just say, oh, they felt sad or upset or, you know, ouch, that hurt. But really getting into like how they're thinking and feeling without saying it is the real soundtrack part of that. It's the real heartstring pulling part. So getting to that part.
Yeah.
Making sure that and I guess that's why I really like to think of story structure and outlining versus just straight up plotting, because we kind of get focused on the events driving the story when we're plotting versus thinking about the emotions and the character part driving the story. If we're really looking deeply at structure and really looking deeply at the emotional journey part, and letting that part drive the story. So letting the character drive the story.
Well, that's one of the things that's been really helpful about going through and having, so if you've never seen Daryl Lynn's Wonderful Cards, each of them has a small description of the typical scenes in the hero's journey, and then they will also have a note about what's the hero's emotional state is. So I have one before me right now that I will just read off as an example of how awesome these cards are. So this is what is typically scene 12. It's in Act 2. And it says, the hero encounters a new guide or mentor, or it can be the same mentor from Act 1. The mentor serves as a guide, teacher, coach, and sometimes a mirror to reflect back the hero's fears and limitations. Major training and preparation commences. Often several allies or a sidekick serve in this role. So that gives us an idea of what is happening externally in the story. Is, you know, okay, great, you can write that scene pretty easily, but the emotional state then comes in. And so the emotional state part of the card says, hero is a reluctant learner, questioning everything, denies shortcomings. They are unwilling to trust, still self-centered or fearful. The hero is reliant on a guide to navigate the new world. So we've got this scene where we've got, you know, our hero, our mentor, allies, sidekicks, all of those people getting together, and they are encountering these new challenges. So that gives us our physical, what's going on in the world. But then we also have an attitude of what is the hero's, what is their mindset, what is their emotional state. And so you've got a hero who questioning everything is completely different from a hero who's totally eager to be involved. And you can play it a lot of different ways, but it's really fun for me to look at the emotional state of the story and to try to figure out how that's going to translate into the story itself and what's the hero's, what is their emotional challenge in this moment.
Awesome.
See how cool you are.
Thanks. I got nothing right now.
Okay. So I'll just go ahead and build on that. So okay. So for us folk who are considering ourselves pansters, the thing is, pansters are doing this already. We're just doing it without having names for it, and we're doing it without a lot of intentionality. And what I think, so there's a really interesting dichotomy a lot of times that's talking about things that are prescriptive and things that are descriptive. Things that are prescriptive basically means you can give a step-by-step talk through of how to do something. So for example, if I said, describe to me the ABCs, you could give me a step-by-step, first there's A, then there's B, then there's C. If I said, describe to me how to tie your shoes, that's something that you know is a procedure, but you don't really know how to describe it very well. You'd say, well, you know, okay, you take one shoelace in one hand, one shoelace in the other hand, then you cross the right one over the left one. Oh, no, wait, you cross the left one over the right one. You cross one over the other, then you loop it around. Oh, no, you loop it under. So the example is shoe tying is a procedural knowledge that you can do it really well, but it's hard for you to describe it. And I think pansters are the writers who are procedural knowledge people. Like, we can write a scene, but we can't really break it down of here's the elements of the scene and here's why we did things that way. And I think plotters are the opposite of plotters can describe a scene and they can tell you, you know, here's all the things that we hit, here's all the elements of the scenes, here's why we did it this way. But I think both can learn from each other, is that those two things can work together. And so I don't see it so much as me not being a panster anymore, of just me being a more mature writer who's able to accept that there are different forms of writing, and those different forms of writing are also valuable, and I can get value out of them.
Oh, I think part of it too, in proceeding intuitively as a pantser, is that sometimes if it's like, yes, you can eventually get there, but you might go down a lot of rabbit holes. It's easy to get distracted. Like, even as a plotter, it's easy to get distracted and be like, oh, you know what'd be great here? A volcano. And not realize, like, oh, a volcano has nothing to do with the emotional development of this person who can't trust people.
I'm sorry, we were talking about volcanoes.
Uh-huh. What? Right. Yeah. So it's easy to follow those squirrels, or it's easy when you maybe don't quite understand, like, what, you know, it's hard to kind of pause in those scenes and get into the messy emotional part. And so it's like, oh, I would much rather write about the volcano or the car chase than about this person dealing with their inner stuff, and their anger, or their, you know, like, and how do you portray that? And so I think as a pantser, sometimes we skip ahead because we don't quite know how to write that, or we go down a rabbit hole because you don't quite understand where the hero is in their story. And so it can take a lot longer. And I know there's the quote, you know, you can, right. Yeah. Shoot. Totally went out of my head. It's not my morning. There hasn't been enough chocolate, but the thing about writing in the dark, you know, as long as you can drive a car in the dark with your headlights on and, you know, only see as far as your headlights, but you can still make the entire trip that way. And mm-hmm. so a lot of people, especially pantsers, kind of glorify that. But the challenge is you already have to know where your destination is. Yes, you can make that trip, but without having a good sense of the destination, you may miss the road signs, or you may miss the, you know, the exits and that you need to take.
or you turn off into tangent land.
And
your story just meanders all over the place.
And so I think especially, you know, and as you were saying, like more experienced writers can do that intuitively and get there pretty quickly, get to their destination because they have internalized the way, you know, we all do that. I can drive to work half asleep because, you know, and not even pay attention because, you know, my car and my muscle memory will get me there. But, you know, if I'm going someplace new, I need a map or I'm never going to make it. I will, in fact, drive 13 hours out of the way to a different thing. So that may have happened more than once in my life. So, yeah, I think that there was a different point I was going to make there too. And so I think having that just to guide you along the way is helpful and important. But also it's really easy to skip emotional steps and it's, if nothing, having story structure is good to diagnose problems later, even if you still want to pants it into the dark, go for it. But it's easy to skip steps and be like, oh, well, the hero has already, you know, emotionally mature and you know, maybe they've skipped ahead in their emotional journey, but plot-wise, they're still in act two, but emotionally, they've already solved the problem. So the rest of the story is boring because they're already totally self-accepting and they're, you know, they are feeling heroic, but then the rest of the plot is just... you know, psychologically they jumped ahead. And so then it's kind of boring because it's just fill in the numbers. And I think we see that a lot in, you know, stories where it's kind of like, I never worried about this hero, you know, by the time you get to Die Hard 6 and he's a superhero practically, and we never worry about him and the car is flying over his head at him because it's just, there's no emotional part of that.
Yeah.
He's totally secure in his ability to solve the problem. And it's like, oh no, that's I think that's the other beautiful part about structure anyways, saying that like it helps you stay on track emotionally.
And I think to take that and run with it a little bit in a different direction, I think one of the things that focusing on the emotional journey or the emotional, how the emotional journey works with the external conflict is it also keeps the, you as the writer, it keeps you thinking of what are the emotional stakes. So to your example, you know, you have this, you know, complete badass character who has transcended us mere mortals and is able to do all these really, really cool things. And so it becomes really hard for them if they're just so blasé and, you know, so super cool and they're never worried about anything and they're completely unflappable. It makes it hard for us to then also worry about them. And if we're not worried about them, then we're not invested in them. We don't care whether they succeed or not. Because at that point, it doesn't matter if it's that character or any other character. You know, it's sort of the action-adventure version of the sexy lamp is, have you heard of the sexy lamp test?
I don't know this test.
So the sexy lamp test is similar to the Bechdel test. It's sort of a step down from the Bechdel test. It says if your female character could be replaced in the story with a sexy lamp, which I assume is a reference to Christmas Story. if your female character could be replaced in the story with a sexy lamp, you know, you've got some work to do. You know, if you can replace your character in the story with a machine gun, like let's just do the sort of, you know, the hoorah guy version of the sexy lamp. So if you could replace your character with a bazooka launcher and machine gun, then they also probably need some work done. So if you can replace, you know, your action adventure character with the machine gun and they just sit there and shoot at things and kill enemies, then, you know, there's no growth, there's no change, there's no interest.
Right.
It's just a machine gun or a sexy lamp.
Yeah. Oh dear. yes, and that is really what we're reading for. Is are they going to be able to grow and change? Are they going to be able to? Are your hero? Like, how do we identify with them if they are already a superhero, and we are not? how are we going to identify with them? So
well, and that's the
and
thing.
Feel their struggles.
Yeah. And you want to understand, like, how would this character confronted with this situation, how would they change? How would they, you know, do they care? Do they not care? Mm-hmm. If they just don't care, if they're just this thing that stomps through the story and are never affected by anything, you know, it might just be an interesting list of events, but that's not really a story. It's just a history.
Yeah. I want to go we'll take this on a slight tangent, but go back to the very beginning of this discussion, and that is that the thing about story structure and plotting and outlining is that all of them are dependent on developing character, and really, and particularly, and character really developing, not just like, you know, are they what their hair color and eye color is, and that they eat oatmeal for breakfast and whatever, but really, really understanding deeply who they are at the very beginning of the story and what their flaws are. And you know, the thing I've been hearing lately is that, you know, that their mistruth or their misbelief, the lie that they tell themselves, and that's usually a pretty deep one, like, I am not lovable, or I, you know, people are not trustworthy, something like that. Mm-hmm. Or as Eric Witchie talks about, the irreconcilable self, where your hero has two beliefs that are incompatible, and but you know, you can kind of believe them until the point where the story starts and they come into conflict with each other, and you can't believe, you know, you have to either dump one of your self beliefs or dump both of them, or find a way to fuse them together. But that are deep operating beliefs, like I have to have my parents' love, and I have to have music. And those are totally fine until the day that you get your application or your acceptance letters to college. And when it is, you know, one is to go to Juilliard and one is to go to Harvard, and your parents really, really will only love you if you go to Harvard Med School. And you really, really want to go to Juilliard and be a musician, like, that's where those irreconcilable beliefs come into play. So, and then your story is about a volcano. No, I'm just kidding. but then you have a really deep issue to figure out through your story. But so all of this talk about story structure and whatnot, it is still really important to develop characters, that you don't get a free pass with that. The beautiful part about thinking about story structure is that it allows you to, you know, once you deeply understand that, is to carefully pace how your character is learning and growing through that, and think about the kinds of problems and conflicts that are going to challenge your character and their issues, so that they can learn and grow. So I do want to just say that at the beginning, because I think we jump right into story structure and people are like, well, if I could just plot it, but it's like, well, you actually have that character work to do first. And then structure just helps it magically unfold. And then hopefully as Molly is learning, like, you can do some of that work on, you know, in your outline or blueprint before you write, so that you don't have to write thousands and thousands of words, especially as a pantser down a rabbit hole, and then it's hard to let go of those words. So hopefully that will give you sort of like a first a zero draft before you write, and then once you sit down to write, you'll have a really solid understanding of character and where they're going.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll get off my
soapbox. My turn on the soapbox. So I will say, as a pantser person, I think my biggest fear has always been, like, it ruins the story. I'll lose all the spontaneity. Like, I sometimes am just, you know, a bolt from the blue scene comes into my head, like, oh, wouldn't this be so cool? And I think a lot of pantsers, myself included, feel like, oh, but if I write all this stuff down, then it's going to take all of that out of the story. It's going to take all the magic out of the story. And it's just going to make it very procedural and very dull. And so I think what what me as the Panzer person has to do is to also say, okay, well, I have an idea. If the story goes in a different direction, you know, I can indulge myself and I can write that scene. And maybe that's not the scene that I plan to write in that moment, but maybe that scene can go elsewhere in the story. Or maybe maybe at the end of the day, there's going to only be 3 lines of dialogue from that scene that end up making it into the story. But at least in the back of my head, I have some kind of idea of, like, in general, this is where the story is supposed to go. So it hopefully will not ruin the story for me, or make it less fun to write.
I think you can still, like, even just having the emotional beats, I know that probably, you know, the person is going to have a fight here with their spouse, and I may not know perfectly what it's about or where it's going to take place, but just having that sense is good. Mm-hmm. So can still keep the spontaneity of that.
Yeah, it won't kill it.
Yes. Okay. Have we anything else you want to say about? Looking at story structure and plotting?
Not currently. I will be excited to see if I can actually write this full story, if I can plot out the whole thing and then write the full story and have to report back and say how it worked. I don't expect the first one out of the gate to be a smashing success, but I think it's a good experiment to test myself. So that should be fun.
Awesome. I have to confess that while I did create the system, I still pants it a little bit more than I plot it. Like, I have the general destination in mind, as I was saying, and I have a good, I spend a lot of time on developing character, but I don't always get into the nitty gritty of every single scene plotted out. I'll have the bigger overarching moments, and then there are those moments of discovery, as I'm going along the path. Like, I know generally where they're going, but then I still have the opportunity to kind of, and I know emotionally where they are, but I still have the opportunity to discover funky things, like they're going to have a food fight. Which was so unexpected, in this big moment. So I think you can still have that sense of freshness, and still have the pleasure of being a pantser, but at least, sort of like that road trip where as long as you're not on a timeline and you don't have to take exactly this, this exit at this time, you can still stop and look at the giant beaver statue or whatever, but, or you don't have to choose exactly which gas station you're going to stop at for Twizzlers, but you will eventually get there, but you get to kind of discover fun things along the way as well. So
that's a good analogy. I like
it. So, okay. Well, I look forward to hearing about your progress on the story. It's going to be fun. So, is it time to turn to an editing tip? Do you want to throw anything at us this week?
I do. I don't know if I've given this editing tip on the show yet, but I think it's very appropriate for today. Is my editing tip is once you have completed your story, whether it be a novel or a short story, probably not a flash fiction, you don't have to do it then. But once you have completed your story, write a synopsis. And I know synopsis are like invented by the devil to make us insane. But do it anyways, and it doesn't have to be a formal, you don't have to find the perfect like format of synopsis, but just write a 2 or 3 page long synopsis of what your story is about. And the reason you should do this is, one, you're going to need it eventually when your story gets published. But more importantly, when you go back to revise, it is good for you to think of what did you intend to write, because that's what you're going to write in your synopsis, is what did you intend the story to be about? And then when you are revising your story, it will help you to find the places in your story where it's not about the things that you wanted it to be about, and it's about a volcano with a squirrel in it instead.
That's a great idea. I would add to that, make sure that you're charting the emotional part of what it's about. It's not about the volcanoes and squirrel chases. It's really about you know, where your hero is emotionally on that. So if you also note what's happening emotionally in your synopsis, it's going to be so much more engaging to read. I think people get lost in it because it's a plot. Well, first they do this, and then they do this, and then they do this, and they forget about the emotional part of it. So that will also help you really see that, like what's there and what's missing, and is it about what you think it's about? So
excellent.
That's an awesome tip. good tip, Molly. Okay. Well, any big writing plans for the next week or two?
Just this bold experiment. So we'll see how it goes.
Super exciting and can't wait to hear. I'll report back in on how Eric Witchie's weekend goes. I'm excited to work with conflict, and then I'll probably fight with everybody next week. Just kidding. So should be good and continue on my short story path until I have that little window to do some plotting. So, all right. It's been great talking to you, Molly. Have a fun writing week.
You too. Bye, everybody. Right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.